You're listening to The Gabrielle Sanders Show, brought to you by Labriut Self-Heating Meals.
Sarah Yoheved Rigler is a well-known Jewish writer who lives in the old city of Yerushalayim. You've seen her work in Jewish Women Speak About Jewish Matters, Heaven on Earth, Israel, Life in the Shadow of Terror, and Sarah Shapiro's latest work, The Mother in Our Lives. And, you know, she's even in the book called Chicken Soup for the Jewish Soul. Sarah Rigler's latest work is Holy Woman, The Road to Greatness of Rebbetzin Chaya Sara Kramer. Published by Shar Press and distributed by Art Scroll, it's flying off the shelves. Out barely 3 weeks, it's already going into its second printing. Here to talk about the book and the extraordinary people it describes is Sarah Yoheved Rigler. Welcome to the Gabrielle Sanders Show.
Baruch Hashem, it's great to be here.
I'm delighted to have you in studio in particular. You're just at the beginning of a three-week tour?
Yes.
And you're here to promote the book which you've written called Holy Woman. We just mentioned that. Let's go back to even before the presence of the Holy Woman in your life, and let's talk about the bridge you walked over, because I take it you didn't grow up in, I want to say a typical Jewish home, but in this sense, you didn't grow up in a typical Orthodox Jewish home, did you?
Unfortunately, I did grow up in a typical Jewish home, and it wasn't Orthodox. I grew up in a typical conservative Jewish home, had no sense at all of what true Torah was all about, thought I knew a lot about Judaism, and really wasn't even on the level of knowing that I didn't know, which was a real impediment to going forward. When you don't know that you don't know, you're really in trouble, and that was my situation for many years. I was looking for a spiritual path, one that could take me to real spiritual growth and closeness to God.
It took you to what?
Well, it took me to India. I was in India four times, and there I met some extraordinary people who could do things that I couldn't do. For example, very accomplished in psychic phenomenon. And they showed me that there was such a thing as a spiritual path and that you could get from here to there, and it was worth walking on. I did not know that Judaism also offered a spiritual path until years later, 15 years after I was on this path. Rabbi Joseph Pollack of Boston came to our ashram and started talking about love of God even unto madness. And I thought, what? What does Judaism have to do with love of God? I never heard in our synagogue where I went every single Shabbat. I never heard the rabbi talk about love of God, rarely heard the rabbi talk about God at all. Mm-hmm. And this was a great revelation to me. It was a real pella that Judaism has something to do with love of God. And once I heard that, then my path led me to 2 months in Israel, studying at Neve Yerushalayim, and sure. From there on in, it was just wow and go.
Neve has been a launching pad for many, many searching souls. I know that. I've known several who've gone there and who've gone on to, let's say, higher levels of Jewish discovery and integration of Torah, mitzvot into their lives. During your time, that early time there, you met the woman who is talked about, who is described as the Holy Woman in this new book that came out by Shar Press. Most of us have never heard of Rebbetzin Chaya Sara Kramer. Who was she?
Well, most people have never heard of her because she was deliberately hidden. She was a real nistar. Her husband was considered by great rabbis to be one of the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim. There was a calculated hiddenness about their lives. It wasn't they just happened not to be known. They purposely hid who they were. When her husband was asked, Rav Yaakov Moshe Kramer, and he would never let anyone call him Rav in his lifetime. I can do what I want now because he's not here in this world, but he would never let anyone call him Rav. He would always say, I'm not a Rav. I don't have smicha. If you have a shaila, go and ask the Rav of the Moshav. People would come to their house, to the Kramer's house, and ask to see the Rav, and he would send them to the Rav of the Moshav. He would not accept anybody giving him any honorifics whatsoever. One story that I love, a boy who was a Ben Bayit in their home, Tzviki Stiglitz, was once coming to their house, and he could see through the window that Reb Yaakov Moshe was sitting there learning Gemara. He could see from the distinctive oversized tome of the Gemara. And as soon as his feet hit the gravel path and started to make noise where his footsteps could be heard, he lost sight of the window. Some half a minute later, he arrived at their doorstep, knocked on the door. They answered the door, and by that time, there was Rav Yaakov Moshe sitting there with a Sefer Tehillim in his hands. As soon as they saw someone coming, he put away that Gemara. He did not want people to know the extent of his... I mean, the fact is he finished learning Gemara for the first time at the age of 17. He knew everything, but there was a calculated hiddenness about their lives.
Why?
Because, first of all, their humility, and second of all, why are Lamed Vav Tzaddikim hidden? Because somehow through their hiddenness, they're able, by avoiding the limelight, they're able to work on a spiritual level that can get maybe off track by too much limelight. She gave me permission to write the book in her lifetime, which was a great boon because I was able to run to her when I had questions and I would hear a story and I'd want to know how she reacted to this and that. It was a real help. But I only had permission to write the book using a pseudonym, not using her real name. And it was only after she was nifter last year that I asked a shilat and was told that I could use her real name now that she's not in the world anymore.
Now, we are around her yard site now, aren't we?
Yes. Gimel Sivan was her yard site, her first yard site.
What was it like for you to know this couple?
The Rebbetzin, and I was close to her. I was not close to him. I met her in 1985, met him a year later in 1986. He was nifter in 1990. But then she lived in Mea Shearim in Jerusalem, not far from where I live, and so I would see her very, very frequently. My closeness was to her. She loved me so much. She loved from the very first moment she met me. She threw her arms around me and gave me this bear hug like a long-lost daughter she had been waiting all her life to reunite with. And she didn't know me at all. I guess she did, you know, but the sense when being in her presence was a sense of being unconditionally loved. She loved every Jew. She loved every neshama. It didn't matter who you were. She just like zeroed in on the deepest level and she loved every Jew. And she made you feel like you're $1 million. Everybody who knew her said that.
This is a theme that comes up continuously through the book. Her quality, her what we call Avas Yisrael, and that she didn't make any difference where a person came from. It could be someone secular. It could be someone who was Orthodox all their life. It could be from but frustrated. They could be somebody who was a Tzioni, whose religion really was the cotton fields of their kibbutz. Didn't make any difference. Those were not issues. Although she was very clear where she stood in relation to Torah, she was also very clear where she stood in relation to loving people. And I think that was a powerful thing. Another thing that comes up constantly through the book is this was a woman endowed with extraordinary spiritual abilities.
Yes.
What did you see?
I saw that she could read minds. She always knew exactly what I was thinking. Rather irksome habit, because you imagine going to someone and not just having to watch what you say, but having to watch what you think. She knew the future. She knew what was going to happen and when it was going to happen very often. I mean, many people told me stories where she said, and it's quoted in the book, you know, stories how she said, you know, you're going to get your get before Rosh Chodesh Adar. And this was already Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar. And that afternoon, the get, which had not been forthcoming for 9 years, this woman had been a Naguna. That afternoon, the get arrived.
Amazing. Yeah. There are a lot of stories in the book like this.
Yes, a lot of stories.
And it starts out very early in her life. I mean, one of the features that comes up right up in the beginning of the book is when the Rebbetzin was a little girl. How old was she when that?
8 years old.
8 years old, where she cursed a boy for abusing her, verbally abusing her, and he died that day. And her father gave her the great lesson that was to be the lesson of her life. And what was it he said?
He said, if you have the power to curse, you have the power to bless.
And that is the kind of life that she lived. Yes. Now, and speaking of the kind of life, everything that they were spiritually, it was just the opposite for them materially. They were on such a high level spiritually, and yet, you saw the home where they lived in the moshav,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. It was unbelievable.
No normal people
would live like that. It was a hovel, yes. They chose to live like that. I mean, I discussed in the book, was it his idea or her idea? But bottom line was, he wanted to live like that, and she wanted to do his will. And so they lived without running hot water. They never owned a washing machine. She was cooking on a Primus kerosene stove when everybody else in the Moshav had a gas range. They didn't have electricity or telephone until they started taking in the multiply handicapped children and decided for safety's sake they needed to be able to telephone a doctor. They needed not to have kerosene lamps burning in the house, so they got electricity. all of these things they considered luxuries, and they did not allow themselves any luxuries. Although for other Jews, if another Jewish family came and said, you know, they don't have money to buy a washing machine, they would like somehow come up with money to give them so that this other family could have a washing machine, but they themselves never had a washing machine.
They made over 400 shidduchim during their days.
405 shidduchim.
And they paid for many of them.
Yes, they would not only make sure that, you know, if the shidduch was going to be potentially stopped because one side didn't have enough money, they would somehow raise the money. A huge amount of money went through their hands, somehow not affecting their lifestyle whatsoever. One of the strangest scenes I can remember in my association with them was the year after I came to Israel was 1986. I was just making Aliyah. I was on my way to Haifa to pick up my lift. And in those days, I don't know how it is now, you needed to pay for everything in cash. So Rabbi Yaakov Moshe was very concerned that I didn't have enough cash with me because you needed cash shekels. And I said, no, I checked out how much I need. I have enough. And he reached under his table in this hovel where he was living. He had a sakit nylon, an Israeli plastic bag full of 100 shekel notes and 50 shekel notes. And he pulled out a 50 shekel note and forced it on me just in case I should have it, in case I needed more cash to release my lift. But here he had this bag full of money, and everything around me was just like the utter poverty in which they lived. The bag was only for other people.
We want to talk about what their lives mean to us today. Though they've gone on to Olam Haba, their work continues. One of the expressions of their work, of course, is in this book that you wrote, Holy Woman. It's only been out 3 weeks, and it's creating quite a stir. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about the all-important issue about why anybody's even listening to this program, which is to answer the question, what's in it for you? And we'll be back right after this.
There's no need to wait up until midnight Monday nights. You can listen to recent broadcasts of The Gavriel Sanders Show in the audio archives at gavrielsanders.com.
We're having a fascinating discussion here with Sarah Yocheved Rigler, who is the author of many pieces of literature, but her most recent work is Holy Woman, The Road to Greatness of Rebbetzin Chaya Sarah Kramer. This book is very different than any other biography that I've read. I don't care whether it's Judaica Press or Feldheim or Art Scroll or any. This has a completely different flavor and emphasis to it. Most biographies that I've read about so-called holy people leave me feeling pretty unholy. This one doesn't. This one gave me a sense of hope and that there's something here that I can connect with that can take me from where I am to someplace beyond where I am. I was going to say to where I want to go, but I don't even know that. Mm. I just know that the book has an elevating capacity because of a feature which you put into this in the design structure of it that you call a roadmap or just guidelines. What is this feature that you did?
It was extremely important to me that the book be not just the story of how this one woman achieved spiritual greatness, but it be a roadmap for how every single reader can also achieve spiritual greatness. Because in line with the Bali Musar, I'm in a Musarvad now for 10 years with Rav Lev Kellerman, the purpose of all of our lives is to grow spiritually. So the question is, how do we do it? And when we look at someone who has attained great heights, question is, how can we get there? It's interesting that she got there, but how can I get there? So in this book, every time she faced a fork in the road between any kind of a challenge or test, I have a roadmap logo. It looks like a little road sign of a fork, and the font changes to italics, and I just stop in the middle of the story and discuss the nature of her challenge and the nature of this challenge in general, mm-hmm. and how it affects all of us on whatever level we are. And most of us are on, you know, like the medium level. So for medium Jews like you and I, how such a challenge might face us and how we can also come out ahead or pass such a test.
Of the many that are in the book, they appear very mm-hmm. frequently. Is there one or so that kind of leaps out at you as being something we should hear about right now?
So the Kramers never had any children of their own. They very much wanted to. Rebbetzin Hayasara desperately wanted her own children, did everything in the world that was possible in those days to have her own children, and never succeeded. So the nature of that test is, can a person be happy despite not getting what they most want in life? In this particular section where I discuss her response to her own failure to have children, happiness was something that she chose. She once said to me, "You think I should have been both barren and sad?" So she didn't connect at all her level of happiness or sadness with what she got or didn't get in life. Mm-hmm. They were two separate things. Mm-hmm. You know, she was poor, she was a Holocaust survivor, she didn't have children, she worked very hard in the fruitless job of taking care of multiply handicapped children for which she was not paid. So all those things were on one side, and her level of happiness or sadness had nothing to do with any of those things. It was something she chose. She chose happiness. She worked to attain it. So for all of us, we have a similar challenge. Can we be happy when we don't get what we want in life? Whether it's that we don't get the shidduch we want, or the children we want, or the job we want, or the financial level that on which we would like to live. This is a choice all of us have. Can I be happy even when I don't get what I want in life? So looking at the nature of how she dealt with this challenge can inspire all of us to also make that choice to be happy despite what we have in life.
That lesson alone mm-hmm. is worth the price of the book mm-hmm. because I know that that's certainly been mm-hmm. one of the illusory thoughts that I've had, that the purpose in my life is to get enough of what is necessary to reach that plateau called satisfaction. But this book is all about how to be in a state of satisfaction, whether you have, don't have, things are good, not good, whatever. In other words, you're not a fair-weather friend of Hashem.
Yes.
It's not based on
yes.
circumstances. And that's probably one of the most hard-punching points that comes through in this book, because these people clearly didn't do it because they were guilt-ridden. They did it because they were so motivated mm-hmm. by something so beyond them. They were this just like living expression of something beyond this world. And yet, and this thing I love most about the book, quite frankly, is this is not people on the other side of a chasm mm. that we can't reach. You put a ladder there so we can get across. And that's a powerful thing. What has been the reaction of the book so far? What are people telling you?
Everyone tells me they love the book because of what we're speaking about now, the spiritual manual that is really the book within the book that tells them, you know, what can I do in my life to grow spiritually. Everybody wants to grow spiritually. And having a role model, especially for women, there's a real dearth. Not that there's a dearth of role models. There are some wonderful Rebbetzins and Tzidkaniot around. But, you know, an hour before Shabbos, to see how a tzedekis handles the challenge of dealing with all the stresses of an hour before Shabbos. Well, most of us women do not have the opportunity to be in somebody else's kitchen an hour before Shabbos to see how she handles stress. So the role models may be out there, but I don't have access to them because an hour before Shabbos, I'm in my own kitchen mm-hmm. handling or not handling my stresses. So what the book does is it gives us a glimpse into the life of a tzedekis, her challenges, and how she dealt with her challenges, and we see it from the inside. You know, what her the challenges in her marriage, in her childlessness, with people not liking her, having, you know, difficult neighbors, living with her husband's relatives, all the challenges that the rest of us face as well. And we get to see the role model of how she did it. And why I wrote the book, I'd like to tell you why I wrote the book.
Why'd you write the book?
A long time ago, in the 70s, when I was in the New Age world, there was a book called The Inner Game of Tennis.
I remember it.
Do you remember it?
Sure.
So this book held that the way to learn to play tennis is not to have an instructor who will tell you how to hold the racket, how to stand, how to swing, all this. And you have all these rules in your head. When you get out on the court, you're so confused trying to remember all the different rules. The ball's flying at you over the net and you miss it. The way to learn to play tennis, he held, is you watch an expert tennis player play, and something in your mind internalizes the picture, and then you get out on the court and you just duplicate it. So that's what this book is about. I'm giving the reader a picture of an expert at living. It's a picture. By reading the book, we get the picture in our heads, and then we get out on the court of life, and we remember, oh yeah, that's how she did it. I'll give you a very, very simple example. Erev Shavuot, In our house, we have Learning for Women from Midnight Until Dawn on Shavuos night. Rabbitson Sipora Heller walks in from Har Nof. Mm-hmm. I live in the old city, so everybody wants to be with her. It's an hour and a half walk. So from 2 a.m. to dawn, Rabbitson Heller teaches. And usually we have a rabbi who teaches the first half of the night. This particular year, the rabbi who we had scheduled had an emergency, had to leave for America. So I said, you know, I'll teach the first half of the night. I'll talk about Rabbitson Hayasara Kramer. So I really had to get a nap Erev Shavuos because not only I was going to stay up all night learning, I was going to be teaching. But I had cousins who were coming to the old city, and they had rented an apartment, and they had not been able to come in to get the key and to see what was what, which were the fleishik dishes, the whole what was, where are the extra sheets, the extra pillows. So the person who was renting the apartment had showed me everything. And here it was getting closer and closer to Shavuos, and I wanted to take my nap. I needed my nap. Mm-hmm. And they weren't coming. Finally, I said, look, I'm going to take my nap. And I gave my 12-year-old son the key. I said, when they come, give them the key and they'll figure out what's what. I lay down to take my nap, and I started thinking, what would Rabbitson Hayasara have done, you know? And I just saw the picture. It wasn't a question of saying what's right, what's wrong, what does the halacha say, what's the better mita. It wasn't that kind of thing. It was the inner game of tennis. It was like I had a picture in my mind of Rabbitson Hayasara relinquishing sleep for the sake of people all the time. And I jumped up and I went and gave them the key and showed them what was what in the apartment. Because I had this picture in my mind. If I had not had the picture, if I had just had the idea, oh, the right thing to do is to get up and forego my sleep in order to do this for them, I would have done it, but I would have done it like resentfully or half-heartedly. But since I had a picture of Rabbitson Hayasara, she not only would have done it, but she would have done it joyfully, lovingly. So I was duplicating the picture. And that's why I was able to do it with my whole heart and with joy. Without resentment.
And this is what you've brought to all of us in this book called Holy Woman, The Road to Greatness of Rabbitson Hayasara Kramer. Speaking with Sarah Yoheved Rigler from the old city of Yerushalayim. It's been there many years, 21 years you've lived in Eretz Yisrael now.
Yes.
Amazing. The book is so delightfully written. If you appreciate good writing, the book is just a wonderful read. It's a massage for the mind in that respect. You'll love it. But the life lessons that come along with it are heart-transforming. So your mind will be absorbed, but your heart will be transformed. More than informed, you will be transformed. I don't say that about very many books, but this is certainly one. This program is dedicated to information, inspiration, motivation, and transformation. This book, Holy Woman, is, you know, it's 4 out of 4 on the Sanders scale of what's good here. So Gavriel encourages you to get out, right out to any place where good Judaica books are sold. You can get it at artscroll.com. It's on sale right now, 20% off through artscroll.com and at all Judaica stores where Artscroll books are sold. So be sure to pick it up. I was speaking at IDT at the yeshiva there this last week. A lady who was there for lunch came by and said to me, you know, we just got this book, Holy Woman, and if I had only one book in my library, this is the book it would be. And I thought that was a great compliment because it's so powerful and life-related. We're out of time on this segment. Mr. Music's coming up here. But we will be back with a few other closing remarks to make. I just want to say to you, Sarah Yoheved Rigler, thank you for this work of love that you've given to Klal Yisrael. We appreciate it.
Baruch Hashem.
Kol Tov.